It is Wednesday, March 15th, 2023. Welcome to episode 80, Big 8-0. Toeing the Slab, pitching with David Cone, pitching discussions each and every week with the five-time World Series champ, the former Cy Young Award winner David Cone, the research ace James Smythe, myself, Justin Shackle, producer Dan Rourke here as well for the ride. And the World Baseball Classic has taken over Team USA. Big rebound for them over Team Canada. Lance Lynn, the latest American hero here. Guys, what do we think about the American ass-kicking that took place Monday night?
Well, now, you know, the stars came out. The top of the lineup for the Team USA is going to carry that team, and they did what they had to do. It's always – the Team USA is offensively driven, although Lance Lynn, as you mentioned before, deserves a lot of credit, and he's going to be a big part of it, but – they're going to have to bang. They're going to have to hit their way through this thing.
They got to hit their way through it, and they did against Canada. A little bit of a taller task against some of these other teams. It's a great cleansing win after the disaster from the night before, and they got the help they needed from Great Britain beating Colombia. So now if they beat Colombia, they're moving on and can just put that loss behind them from the other night.
Yeah, they fell to Mexico, kind of created a little nerves about, hey, whether will Team USA get to the next round or not? Like, they obviously need some help. But last night, 12-1 victory over Canada, we saw what they are fully capable of. So we'll get into that game. We'll get into Team USA as a whole, the World Baseball Classic as a whole, because it's providing terrific energy. Also, like, if we're seeing anything in the style of play that could portend to certain things we see in the 2023 Major League Baseball season. Trevor Bauer has found a team across the Pacific in Japan. We'll touch on that. We'll continue our series about the most important starting pitchers heading into 2023. We're going to focus on the AL Central and the NL Central, and then some Yankees talk later in the episode. A lot of injuries have popped up for this team over the last week to 10 days. We'll talk about what's most concerning to us and when we could potentially see that trade that we've been talking about all offseason. We said, hey, offseason's not over yet. Until opening day, a trade could be in the works. Well, we're getting pretty close. So I'm trying to figure out when we could identify whether or not a trade will actually be happening. But let's start us off with the opener as we do each and every week. David, what do you have for us this week on the opener?
Well, it just has to be for me. You know, and I was part of the group back in the 90s that started to talk about what it would be like to have a World Baseball Classic, like a World Cup. And we thought, man, it's unpredictable, right? Some of the Latin American countries would have great teams. Some of the Asian countries would have great teams. Japan, we knew, would be great. But the emotion that we're seeing is probably even beyond what we'd envisioned back in the 90s when we first started talking about having something like this. So I'm just blown away. You know, by in Miami, what's going on there with the different fan bases, Colombia, Nicaragua, Dominican, obviously, Puerto Rico. I'm going to go Wednesday night. I'm down in Miami. I'm going to go see Puerto Rico and Dominican play. I cannot wait. It is nuts. The atmosphere, they stand, they cheer. The emotion they show the entire game is something to behold. It's beyond our wildest expectations when we first, as I said, envisioned this thing. And even Korea and in Japan, the passion they have. I think if you're trying to grow the game globally, this has been just a great format, even with its flaws, even though the pitchers are in spring training, even though it's not perfect timing wise, it's hard to find the perfect time to have this sort of an event. But nonetheless, the reaction of the different fan bases in the different countries is just over the top. Fantastic for baseball to grow globally.
I think Puerto Rico against the Dominican Republic is the matchup that, in terms of energy and excitement, you probably circle as the best one that is on the schedule and that could be played as of this moment. Obviously, we need to see how the rest of the tournament plays out, but when those two countries meet in Miami, that is going to be fire. And let's give credit to the fan base of Mexicans that showed up in Phoenix as well, because they've run the show at Chase Field in Arizona.
Yes.
You mentioned a interesting topic, how to make this tournament better, how you can have more appeal to the World Baseball Classic. Is this the best time to have it, or do you think it's after the World Series?
Yeah, I I'm not as well versed on the ins and outs of trying to match up everybody's interests, you know, culturally or country to country. So I'm not sure I have a definitive answer on that. But what I will say is it would be nice if the pitching was fully ramped up for everybody, and especially for Team USA. If they had the best pitchers who were all the way ramped up, that would be a classic to me. That's what you'd want to see. The obvious answer is it's tough when these guys are in their virtual spring training, when there's pitch counts and there's your first start, you got 60 pitches to work with or 65, and then it gradually goes up from there. So that's less than enviable. I wish you could get to the point where there's no pitch counts. So when that is that during the All-Star break? Is that after the World Series? Kind of hard to say, but you just want the best talent there. How do you pick the right time for the best talent? And the best talent always is kind of led by the pitching. Is the pitching fully ramped up? Are the best pitchers there across the world? And yeah, you know, that's a hard one. I really believe Team Japan has a bit of an advantage there. I mean, Otani's ready to go. Sasaki's ready to go. Roki, who's just an amazing young talent, maybe one of the best pitchers in the world. They may have the advantage because they've been ramped up probably a little bit earlier over in Japan, although they're not, I would say 100% either as far as that goes. So how do we get to the point where the pitch team's, you know, ready to go? It's hard to say.
It's a tough needle to thread, because if you try to do it after the season, I think you'll still have run into the same problem where a lot of pitchers wouldn't want to add innings after the season, as opposed to ramping up sooner or going into full higher energy games right away. The best idea I think I've seen, I've seen it from several writers. I think Joe Sheehan is one of them, there's no getting around. You'd have pool play now, or at least closer to the beginning of the season where pitchers might be a little more stretched out, and you save the knockout stages, quarterfinal, semifinal, championship, until the All-Star break. And then every 3 years when it's a WBC year, you, in lieu of the All-Star game, that All-Star break is done with your round of eight, Final Four championship, which is also tough because you'd have to schedule that around some of the other international seasons and whatnot. But that's one possible solution.
Yeah, the calendar as a whole makes it really difficult to find that ideal time worldwide, year-round, for all the countries involved. I would love to see a break in play in the regular season in Major League Baseball for everyone to come together for this tournament, but it's really tough logistically. Right now they're figuring it out. This is probably the best time, but if we could make something happen where there's a little 10-day break in the middle of the Major League Baseball season for the World Baseball Classic every 3 years, I think that would be pretty cool, because like David alluded to, we would probably have more of the best participating on the pitcher's mound. Guys, so you know this. Listeners, I send a rundown of topics before each episode every single week, and I sent this week's out before the U.S. played Canada on Monday night, right after they lost to Mexico the night prior. And I asked, hey, if the U.S. doesn't advance out of pool play, like, should we be more disappointed in the team, the actual roster, or just the results? Because we know baseball, any team could be beaten on any different day. There's obviously a small window here to succeed in this tournament. Do you think that the performance by Team USA on Monday night brought some new people into the World Baseball Classic, like the fringe viewer who likes baseball but really hasn't gotten into the World Baseball Classic just yet? They see the star power on display. Maybe didn't even watch the game in real time, but they see the results now. Man, U.S. crushed Canada 12-1. They're seeing this star power on display in the middle of March, and they're saying to themselves, okay, hey, this is pretty cool. What do you guys think?
That's an interesting topic and a point. Yeah, you know, definitely. To me, it's still about culturally celebrating the different countries and the contributions to the health of the game of baseball. When you think about, you know, players historically from Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, and Mexico, and even Nicaragua, Colombia, it's a way for them to celebrate. You know, these are our big league players that have contributed a lot to Major League Baseball, and this is a way to showcase that. And, you know, I kind of see it more in that vein, as opposed to sort of the average or fringy fan getting attracted to baseball, maybe culturally, maybe worldwide. Yes, grow the sport worldwide. But I see this as a celebration to celebrate. Hey, you know what? It's America's pastime. It's an American game, but the Latin influence is undeniable and deserves to be celebrated. And I see this as a chance to do that.
I think there's a chance you can rope in some fans, you know, a little tougher, you know, 10 o'clock on a weeknight, who's jumping in to catch Team USA, probably some, but it's, you know, right before March Madness is really kicking into. But I think it's more of a macro, you know, in a macro sense, getting people interested in baseball, even if it's not literally, you know, tonight's World Baseball Classic game. You mentioned Nicaragua and Colombia, Coney. Those are two countries where early on, they didn't have a whole lot of big league players. Now you look at Colombia, look at Nicaragua, some of these other countries where they might not have had, they might have had one or two major leaguers. Now they have several, and there are a lot more players reaching the big league level from not only the usual suspects, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, et cetera. So it's growing the game. And if it's good that they included 20 teams instead of 16 too, because now you have Great Britain in, you have the Czech Republic in. So you have more countries involved growing the game internationally. I think it's nothing but a good thing.
I think if you're a U.S. fan, you're living, you're American, you're in the U.S., you're seeing the cultural excitement from these other countries. And you could be saying to yourself, that's awesome. But it's tough for me to get into it because it's not my culture. Then you see a U.S. performance like yesterday, perhaps it could ignite you a little bit to become more invested, more interested, and follow the tournament more. Last night, Lance Lynn, five impressive innings, five important innings for him and for Team USA, setting the tone on the mound. What did we like from Lance Lynn? Because I think he's going to be a very key piece to the White Sox success in 2023.
He's perfect for this format because he's such a strike thrower and he throws a lot of fastballs. So he doesn't need to sort of have all the rough edges worn off or working in his third and fourth pitches. He is as aggressive as it comes with his fastball. So you know, when you're lining up stylistically speaking, lining up pitchers, you know, he's right at the top of the list. A great pick. They're lucky to have him there. He's the leader of that staff without a doubt. And he'll be ready to move on up in terms of his pitch count, his next start, and then on after if they continue to move on. So, yeah, he's the perfect leader of that staff and came up huge. And, you know, he's got some balls, right? He's got some guts, I guess, rather, is a better way to put it. I mean, he's a leader. And that enthusiasm that he pitches with, that fire he pitches with, is infectious throughout the team.
You know, there's a lot of talk about how thin the U.S. rotation and pitching staff might be going into the tournament. Well, he's somebody you don't have to worry about. He looks great so far already. And it looks like he's the kind of guy that could roll out of bed and just, you know, pump four innings in. So I think it's a great anchor in the U.S. rotation.
It's kind of corny when I phrase it this way, but I mean, like, Lance Lynn is like the cowboy of Team USA. I will never forget when he was traded to the Yankees and we're just, you know, doing a get to know you type of interview. And I'm saying, like, hey, what's your mentality out on the mound? He's like, opponent in the batter's box trying to take money out of my pocket. I'm not letting that happen. And, you know, he rocks the cowboy boots, has the beard. I just see him as like that cowboy figure, yeah, for Team USA. And I want to see more of it here in this tournament.
Well, is there, old school. You're right. Old school. Yeah.
Yeah. Have that old school gunslinger mentality on the mound. Is there anything that we're seeing in the style of play in the tournament so far that we think could be a theme for the 2023 major league season?
The things I've seen, you know, James, I don't know if you've noticed this as well. I'm sure you have, but it's to me, it's the contrast in the new rules. And then there's not a pitch clock. They're really taking their time. Right. And I get it. You know, there's a lot of emotion. It's tournament play. There is no pitch clock. But when you juxtapose that against what we're seeing in spring training, it's like, wow, what a difference. So that's what I've heard more than anything from some of the people within the industry, the baseball people, the television people. It's like, wow, Yeah, this is a huge difference. So there was no way they could have incorporated the new rules, the pitch clock, into this tournament format in the WBC because all the countries are involved, and too much too soon. But it just makes me look forward to the Major League season this year and see exactly the continuing use of the pitch clock and the contrast of styles and how slow the game seem in the WBC comparatively.
Right. And the one thing I think is unique to the WBC is the energy and the passion that you see the players have and the crowds. But as far as just gameplay, I don't really think there's anything that would carry over. It's a good point, Coney. There is a lot more time between pitches without the pitch clock. The games are longer. A lot of that could also be chalked up to some higher offense. You know, we've had some real blowouts in games that have dragged on in the WBC. You know, maybe some more mismatches between some of the powerhouse teams and some of the teams that are a little outgunned. So as far as the gameplay is concerned, I don't know if there's anything stylistically that we could, that we'll see carry over, except maybe just more of a, more in the energy type of in the energy aspect of it.
You mentioned the offense coming up at around these games. Obviously, Team USA with a big nine spot in the first inning against Team Canada on Monday night. Mike Trout capped it off, 3-run homer in the first to make it 9-0, kind of cemented the night being over after one inning. Angel fans, cover your ears, because I hate that I have to ask this, but I feel like I have to ask this. Will that home run be the most meaningful homer that Mike Trout hits for a team in 2023?
Ouch. That's harsh. That is very harsh, and it's sad. I mean, unfortunately, it's the legitimate question, obviously, but it goes to the heart of the Angels and, you know, and his career as a member of the Angels. And are we ever going to see him in the spotlight in postseason play? And along with Ohtani too. I mean, you know, we got expanded playoffs last year. The Angels were up for sale. Artie Moreno, the owner, looked like he was going to sell the franchise, backed off, had cold feet, admittedly so, not ready to sell. You know, what's next for the Angels franchise? I mean, it is kind of the story of Major League Baseball. Is two best players, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, other than Aaron Judge, need the spotlight. We need to get those guys in the spotlight. And it's a valid question, Jack. You know, I hope not. I certainly hope not, because, you know, Mike Trout is still in his prime, even though he's had a little bit of some injuries the last couple of years. How much more of his prime were we going to see of Mike Trout? Already a Hall of Famer, already just a meteoric rise in terms of any metric you want to use, and comparing to any player in the history of the game. Mickey Mantle, pick a player, pick the best players of all time, according to WAR. Mike Trout right next to him. Show those numbers. It's just incredible. The guy's going right to the Hall of Fame. He could retire right now and go right to the Hall of Fame. So it's just something we all need to see. We need to see him in the spotlight somehow, some way.
Man, Shaq, that is just cold. I'll say no, because maybe he'll hit an even bigger home run in the WBC.
There you go.
But seriously, the Angels, you hate to dupe yourself into it every single year, but you think maybe this is the season that they actually can contend for a playoff spot. I think one big difference this year compared to years past, it's less of a Trout and a bunch of scrubs, Trout Ohtani and a bunch of scrubs. They have big league players, legitimate players, filling out the rest of the team. They've added Hunter Renfroe, Brandon Drury, Gio Urshela, Tyler Anderson. These guys are not, you know, they're not going to be knocking down the walls. Oh, wow. What a big offseason the Angels had. But it fills out the depth a little better. So if the Angels can be in that, you know, mid, you know, around 500 mix, and, you know, get into the mid 80s, they can contend for a wild card spot.
Rendon, too. Rendon being healthy is huge for them. That's a huge commitment.
I want to look at it glass half full. I want to say there are meaningful home runs for Trout in September, hopefully October. You mentioned the room for more home runs in the World Baseball Classic. I know Japan, Australia are moving out of Pool B onto the quarterfinals already. Like, what is the earliest possible time that the U.S. could meet up with Japan? Because how sweet would it be if you have Ohtani pitching to Trout and Mike Trout's able to go yard there?
It depends on who wins Pool C, right, and who's the runner up in Pool C and D. So,
like, can they meet one another before the finals?
Yeah, because you have the Australia-Cuba side of the bracket and Italy-Japan. That was pools A and B. They're on opposite sides of the bracket. So you're going to have Australia-Cuba. The winner of that's going to face either the Pool D winner or the Pool C runner-up. And then the other side of the bracket, the Pool C winner and runner-up from Pool D. So there is a chance, depending on if the U.S. gets through, are they the Pool C winner? Are they the Pool C runner-up? Which side of the bracket will they be on? But it is, there's a chance that they can meet before the final.
Okay. That would be probably the matchup of the tournament. Really sad that I have to bring that question up, but thought it was appropriate here. Hey, everybody. More Toe on the Slab coming up. Just wanted to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by the Tropical Hockey League. Yeah, the THL. It's a professional roller hockey league where all the teams will be owned by their fans. It's located along the Gulf Coast, the Tropical Hockey League, the first of its kind league of entirely fan-owned teams. I've watched roller hockey in a professional setting before. It goes really fast, so it's very exciting. They're seeking to make the game of inline hockey faster, more free-flowing, exciting. The THL will provide affordable, accessible fun for people of all ages. And you could become an owner today by investing. That's right. By investing in a team, you can become an owner and have a vote in the way your team is run. Check out their WeFunder page today. Become a part of sports history with the Tropical Hockey League. Guys, what has been your favorite story from the WBC thus far as we move away from this topic? What do you like so far?
Well, there's always the Cinderella story that tugs at your heart, right? I mean, it's the kid out of nowhere, you know, and you know, I'm a friend of Matt Harvey's, so what he's done for Team Italy is a nice story out there, trying to make a little comeback in his career. But the kid from Nicaragua, Duque Hebert, who hasn't ever played pro ball before, really, he's never signed a professional contract, strikes out Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez and Rafael Devers in his first inning of work, and the Detroit Tiger scout comes up to him right after the game and signs him and offers him a professional contract to pitch for the Detroit Tigers in front of the entire team. To me, if that doesn't get you, nothing will. I mean, the emotion on that kid's face when that happened, just remarkable. Well, you know, what makes you want to follow him in the minor leagues with Detroit now? He's going to get a chance to actually, you know, play professional baseball.
It's as good as it gets. Props to Tiger scout Luis Molina for going right in after the game and say, hey, you struck out Soto, Julio, and Devers. Let's get you into the Tigers organization. Well, that's my pick too. But if we're going to something else, I was locked in all last week on the games, you know, trying to squeeze them in at weird hours at late at night or early in the morning. But I loved watching all the games from in the Chinese Taipei portion, the Pool A, where you had Chinese Taipei, Panama, the Netherlands, Italy, and Cuba battling it out. You had some real topsy-turvy games. It ended up being a five-way tie as all teams went 2-2. Fun games throughout. The atmosphere was absolutely insane. It was some of the wildest crowds I've ever heard of at a baseball game. And Cuba and Italy moving on via tiebreaker with runs allowed per out recorded. You got into the weeds as far as tiebreakers go, but Cuba and Italy moving on. It was a blast watching those games.
Yeah, the energy and the excitement, the euphoria that those teams after they won shows you why that this is a meaningful tournament. I'm going with just a side story here that kind of showed me the essence of what this tournament is all about. Roki Sasaki from Japan, who we've talked about on this podcast before, and in my opinion, he was the guy who I was most looking forward to perform ahead of the World Baseball Classic. I wanted to see what Sasaki's all about. So Japan played the Czech Republic, who, if you don't know the story of the Czech Republic, it's just a roster of like everyday men who are coming together to play baseball and represent their country. Really cool.
Yeah.
Sasaki hit William Muscala, the Czech Republic, with a pitch. And just to show good sportsmanship after, he gave him two giant bags of candy. I presume it's Japanese candy. But he gave him just two giant bags of candy and it just like had something out of Williamsport to it. It was a really cool little league vibe between two players from two different countries coming together. I think that's the essence of the World Baseball Classic in a nutshell right there. But Roki Sasaki, definitely keep an eye on him as Japan continues to play here in the WBC. Japan also making some news this week in terms of pitching. Trevor Bauer, who we know is a free agent. He signed with a team in the Japanese Professional League. My question here is, will this be the road back for Trevor Bauer into Major League Baseball? Will he be in spring training with a Major League team 1 year from today?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I just don't know, how each individual franchise is going to view that PR nightmare, really. No other way to put it. He needs to pitch, obviously, if he wants to save his career. He had to find a place to pitch. It's been too long. You can't sit out 3 years. You can't sit out two, three, 4 years and expect to come back and perform, no matter how much you throw on the side, however much you train. And he knows how to train as well as anybody in the game as far as the mechanics of pitching. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how you get through that. You never say never, obviously. But he's doing what he has to do, at least from the pitching side of things, to keep it going. He's got to pitch somewhere. And Japan's a high level of competition. So he should feel very fortunate that he gets a chance to go over there and pitch right now.
I wouldn't bet against it, but at the same time, even though it only takes one team to take a chance on him next year, if no one was willing to do it or even entertain the thought this year, is anything he does over there going to change what a team might think of him now? I'm not sure. 'Cause we didn't even really hear rumors. It wasn't like, oh, back channel talk and, someone floats the balloon to see, oh, what's the public going to think if there's rumors of us signing him? There were never really any rumors with any team around him.
Yeah, I don't think there was ever a question of whether Trevor Bauer could pitch at a high level still, despite being away from the game, being punished. Like you mentioned, Coney, Japan, a high level of play. He's getting paid a lot of money, very fortunate in that regard. I think he's going to be getting $4 million to go over to Japan. So that is no small amount of change, even though he was coming off a monster deal with the Dodgers. I wouldn't say there's no chance, but even if Trevor Bauer goes out and lights it up in that Japanese league, it's tough at this moment in time to envision him being on a major league roster 1 year from now. But I will never say never, like James was saying. We started this topic last week talking about our most important starting pitchers in the AL West, the NL West. So we're moving cross country, guys. We're going into the Central divisions now. So as we continue this, we'll touch on the Eastern divisions next week. It'll give us about a week before opening day, so we're timing this up nicely. If you could give one starting pitcher who you deem most important to the complexion of the AL Central and the NL Central in 2023, who do you have?
Wow. We had him on, I'm a little bit biased, because, when we have guests on here, we fall in love with them, right? But I really believe that Cleveland is a team that in the Central Division, even though the schedule's more balanced than it was last year, they're going to have to move around and play more teams outside of their division. Tristan McKenzie, to me, still is the guy ready to take a next step, even though he already kind of made a big leap last year. But his stuff, to me, that there's something about him that's an intangible that's hard to quantify. Just his intellect, his high baseball IQ, his high emotional IQ, the way he handles himself on and off the field. I think he's a pitcher to watch. I think he's going to continue to get better, revise his pitching mechanics, revise and pitch in the world of pitch design, kind of continue to tinker and make all of his stuff better, get a little better shape to his cutter, a little better shape to his breaking stuff. His fastball rides. It's got that natural life to it. So, to me, it's Tristan McKenzie can really take that next step and keep Cleveland right there at the top of the Central Division.
I love that McKenzie pick. He was high on my list. And as great as he was last year, there's more in there too. He had a couple games last year that were as dominant as anybody in the league, 12, 13, 14 strikeout games. So if he can get into more of that bat missing, that could really throw him into an even higher level among these great pitchers in the league. I'm going to go to Chicago with the White Sox, and I'm going to say Lucas Giolito, because this is a guy who was one of the best pitchers in the league for a few years, call it 2019 to 2021, a three-year run where he had a 3.47 ERA, which is a 1.29 ERA plus. He was a real workhorse in that White Sox rotation. 29 starts in 2019, all 12 starts in 2020 with the shortened year, and then 31 in 2021. Last year, he was answering the bell. He made 30 starts, but it was night and day because he had a 4.90 ERA. Which Lucas Giolito are we going to get this year? If it's anything like the 2019 to 2021 Lucas Giolito, the White Sox can really make it a three-team race in the Central. If you look at some of the projections around the AL Central, it really is looking like a three teams in the mix with the Twins, the Guardians, and the White Sox. Pecota has the Twins at 88 wins, Cleveland at 88, Chicago at 79. Fangraphs is a little more optimistic and a little has it a little tighter around the White Sox, with the Guardians, Twins, and White Sox all separated by only 4 games. So that could be a real toss-up of a division based on how the pitching shakes out.
I love that. I think if Giolito can prove that he is the unhittable version from like 2019 through 2021, White Sox are going to be in good shape. I agree with that, James. The division in the AL Central, very much up for grabs. I don't think Cleveland, Minnesota, or the White Sox separated themselves in their offseason activity, but I still believe like the White Sox have the most talent to do great things. They were my World Series pick this time last year. So new manager, perhaps a different culture. Some position players need to stay healthy. I like that Giolito pick from you. I'm going to stay in the White Sox rotation, and I will go with Lance Lynn. He is 35 now. I still think he could dominate, and that's not including what we saw in the World Baseball Classic on Monday night. Sports the great fastball, needs to stay healthy. Only made 21 starts last season. I think if he could provide like 28 to 31 starts, Chicago's going to be in a really good spot with their pitching. Dylan Cease sort of needs to prove that he can do what he did in 2022 again. Like we mentioned, Giolito needs to show that he can bounce back, be that unhittable version of himself. Certain guys in the lineup have to stay healthy. Luis Robert, one of them. But Lance Lynn needs to prove that he could be available nearly every turn in the rotation. I think if he's able to do that, the White Sox have as good of a chance as any of those other two teams to win the AL Central. All right, let's go NL Central here, guys. David, lead us off again.
Yeah, well, it's once again, you know, internal bias on a former guest on our podcast, and you know, he picked low hanging fruit because he's so good, and there's a little bit of fire under his seat right now because of what happened this offseason, his arbitration, his relationship with the Brewers and the organization. But Corbin Burns has got to be the guy. His stuff is devastating. That cut fastball he throws is Mariano Rivera like, really, from a starting rotation standpoint. So to me, he's such a balance of power shifter that if he is on and in his Cy Young form, he does change the whole equation in the Central Division, and he could put them over the top.
Always a good call there. I'm going to go to the Cardinals, thinking if, you know, the Brewers and Cardinals are probably the two best teams in that division. I'm going to go to St. Louis, and I'll go with another will he or won't he bounce back kind of guy, Jack Flaherty of the Cardinals. He's had trouble staying healthy these last few years. In 2019, he was great. He was fourth in the Cy Young voting. That was coming off a year where he was in the top five for rookie of the year. But the last few seasons, 9 starts in the shortened 2020 season, ERA jumped up. Then 2021, only 15 starts. Last year, only 8. So over the last 2 seasons combined, he's only at 114 innings. If he can come back and be anything like he was in 2018 and 2019, that'll really stabilize that rotation. St. Louis is a little bit of an interesting hodgepodge of starters. They don't have that bona fide ace, but it seems like they have a whole bunch of solid middle rotation types. But if you have Flaherty take that step in his comeback, that'll go a long way for the Cards.
He's looked good too this spring. His velocity's back up in the mid 90s. He looks the part. That's a great pick.
Yeah, I'm going back to Milwaukee. I do think it's a two-team race in the Central Division between St. Louis and Milwaukee. And I say this under the premise that Corbin Burnes will be his, you know, elite self automatically. But Brandon Woodruff, who's been a really good pitcher in his career, I feel he needs to take another step forward in terms of giving more. Like, the talent's unquestionable. We know that. We just need more of it here. He pitched a career high with 179 and a third innings in 2021. So injuries, they forced him to miss some time in 2022. If he can make 32 starts, approach 200 innings, somewhere around 185 to 200, be that 1A to Burnes' 1, I don't think there will be any question who the best 1-2 pitching combo in the sport is. Brandon Woodruff, to me, is the key to the Brewers returning to the playoffs in 2023. Again, that's saying if Corbin Burnes is his automatic elite self.
Valid points all the way around. You kind of can pencil Corbin Burnes in, and you're right. You got to have, you know, got to have a partner in crime, so to speak. So it's solid pick.
And it's going to, one guy could swing this division. If you're looking ahead, we'll go back to the projections. Why don't we? So Pecota has Milwaukee at 87 wins going into the season, St. Louis at 86. So one game difference there. But then on Fangraphs, the Cardinals 88, Brewers 86. So very tight there. Cubs hanging around in that 75-76 win range. The Pirates and Reds are two baseball teams who will be participating in the 2023 Major League season. And the less said about them, the better.
All right, guys, let's move on to our Yankees talk here, because a lot of activity has happened over the last week to 10 days or so. All last week, it felt like each day there was another name popping up with an injury, something you obviously didn't want to see. So much of the Yankees' success out of the gate last year, the first half, had to do with all of their players were available. They were healthy. We're seeing the injury bug bite the Yankees pretty hard here in spring training. So I want to get your thoughts. I want to bring in Dan Rourke as well, because he represents the Yankee fan in my eyes. I want to hear what Dan has to say as far as the fan opinion in this question is. A lot of injuries crept up from Carlos Rodon, Tommy Canley, Lou Trevino, Harrison Bader in the outfield, Anthony Rizzo. They are trying to say that the back issue is no big deal, but it has popped up in spring training here for Anthony Rizzo. So what's the most concerning injury for you guys? Let's go with David first.
All right. You know, to me, it's, you know, I'm worried about Carlos Rodon because he's so important. It's such a big offseason signing, but I don't think I'm to the point now to where there's, you know, red lights flashing as of yet. You know, give him some time. He'll come back. He knows his arm. He's probably smart enough to have gotten himself out before he did any damage to his arm. So to me, it goes right to center field, goes to Harrison Bader. That was a huge trade last year, much maligned at the time. He was hurt at the time of the trade. We all know the history. They were really counting on getting Aaron Judge back to right field this year, or even playing left field for Giancarlo to play right field. He's such a big part of the defense. They're really looking forward to it. Aaron Boone loves this guy. They really even talked about maybe even wanting him around long-term, potentially with a long-term offer, maybe in the future. So that's a huge deal. It impacts everybody down the line. I mentioned in our last podcast about Rafael Ortega kind of being a dark horse and making the team. Now they need an extra outfielder. Is Esteban Floreal, has this time come to an end with the Yankees because he's out of options? Do the Yankees keep him now because he can play center field? So really it comes down to that outfield battle now. You need another outfielder. It's going to be really interesting. But I think Harrison Bader is, you know, even though he'll probably be back in 6 weeks, that oblique can take some time. That's a big deal, you know, for the Yankees, because he was the guy that was going to anchor center field and play gold glove defense.
It's a good pick. I'm going to go to the rotation with Carlos Rodon because he's such an important part of this team. If they're going to go anywhere in October and down the line, it's going to be focused on him and Cole at the top of the rotation. Now, granted, he's so good that he can post a great season in 130 or 140 innings better than someone pitching 180 or 200 innings. So if he misses the first few weeks of the season, I'm not going to be worried too much. But with pitchers, they always scare me because there's always something right behind that door. That's something worse could be there. So I'm going to go with Rodon there.
Yeah, we are led to believe at this moment in time that Rodon's forearm injury is nothing major. We only have the Yankees to believe in that. So unless something else happens, we're going to take it at face value. And, you know, this isn't anything major. We're expecting to see Rodon back on the mound at some point in spring training, and he should be ready to go in major league action shortly after the start of the regular season into April, hopefully. But they've downplayed this as nothing major. You still want to hold your breath with any type of pitching injury because it has to, it's not a groin pull or a hammy like Nestor Cortez. It has to do with the arm. So it definitely raises your eyebrows there. What have so many Yankee fans been upset about over the last year plus? It's players playing out of their natural position. This is a domino effect. Harrison Bader being sidelined with an oblique injury, which takes time to recover, is going to lead to that domino effect, possibly of having Aaron Judge in center field more often than the Yankees hope. What is the situation in left field? They went through a lot of outfielders. A lot of outfielders have come and gone. Obviously, the one that sticks out is Andrew Benintendi. He's obviously not there anymore. You're forced to try and play Aaron Hicks in left field. They want that to work so they don't have to have Oswaldo Cabrera play out of a natural position. Now you're going to slide Aaron Judge over. Maybe we see Aaron Hicks move back to center field in a pinch, in an emergency situation. That could be a factor. I don't know how much they value him in center field anymore, but all these other questions are now factored into the equation because Harrison Bader goes down with that oblique injury. So one, it's an oblique. Yeah, 6-week timetable, could be more. Those are tricky injuries, but it also accentuates the fact that the Yankees are kind of being forced to play players out of their natural position. And for me, that's never a good thing.
You guys got me now?
It's my sentiments exactly. Yes. Yeah, we got you now. Yeah.
Loud and clear, Dan.
All right. So what I was going to say is, and kind of playing off what your point was, Shaq, about the timetables and that we don't really know. No individual injury here like really has me tweaking, but I just get very concerned about kind of the lack of accurate timetables the Yankees have given us over the years. Now, if Rodon is back end of April or early May, to me, that's a W. Same with Bader. And that very well could happen. And if that's the case, I think the Yankees will be just fine. But I don't know, how many times have we seen before where, I don't know, the timetable could be 1 week, and then 1 week turns into 2 weeks, 2 weeks turns into a month, and then next thing you know, you're not seeing Rodon until like the All-Star break. That's something that kind of concerns me, just like how much the Yankees actually trusting these timetables. But assuming like if it all goes according to plan and they are back on time, I think the Yankees will be just fine. So like individually, not really concerned all that much. Rodon, if there were to be one, he'd be the guy. I guess my concern would be there for, but had the injury last year, like you guys said, they say it's apparently nothing to do with the UCL. The UCL is intact and fine. So if that's the case, I'm chilling. I just a little nervous about how accurate these timetables are going to end up being.
Fair.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We've seen examples in the past with this organization that would make you a little weary about timetables, time frames for injuries. So very fair there, Dan. Do these injuries add fuel to the trade talks before opening day, or you think they stunt them a little bit?
Well, there's no doubt the Yankees are open for business. The question is do they find the match, you know, enough for them to make a bet? You know, they all have their, you know, their predictive models about, you know, whether this move makes us a better team in the long run or not, and whether they're willing to make that bet in spring training. I'm not sure the deals to be had now. At the end of spring training, it's tricky. That's more of a bottom of the roster moves, trying to match up, you know, a little bit of surplus in this area, try to match up with another team that has a need. To find a big starting pitcher or a big piece of the puzzle at the end of spring training, really difficult. I see those type of deals more towards a trade deadline. So hard to say right now, you know, if there's any big deal out there that's going to shake up everything. So you get the feeling the Yankees are going to just have to make a good old fashioned hardcore decision on who won the job in spring training. Who's going to be the shortstop? that's really the big issue for the Yankees right now. And are they going to exercise patience and give everybody a chance and move Volpe to AAA and keep him waiting in the wings? Or are they really going to pull the plug and say, you know what, or rip the Band-Aid off, or whatever cliche you want to use, and just go with Anthony Volpe right now?
I'm with David. I don't know what difference makers are out there at this stage of the game. Externally, internally, there are things to be done, smaller moves. Does Isaiah Kiner-Falefa get moved to someone who might need an infielder or what have you? But that's the big question going into camp. There weren't a ton of glaring questions around the team at the beginning. The shortstop has been the main one, and it's been great. Everybody's having a good camp. So between Peraza, between Volpe, they're checking the boxes, and I'm interested to see, are they going to go with Volpe or will they start him out in AAA? Oswald Peraza is more than capable as well. So I think they're in a good spot.
Yeah, I talked to the thought that so many of their answers probably lie within the organization, but I'm kind of hanging on a little bit of recent history. Like, we didn't know about Jose Trevino until late March last year. Something could pop up that's definitely not on our radar. Dan, what do you think here, Ben?
Just that, I mean, not that I'm going to predict this or that he'd save the world or anything, but Jurickson Profar is still a free agent, and he's having a pretty solid WBC. The Yankees have been linked to him this offseason. Now, the price, I guess, has been a little bit of an issue. He's looking for around $10 million. Yankees aren't willing to go there. But with him still being a free agent, and I look at IKF, if you were to trade him, and he's set to make $6 million this year, if you can get Profar for, I don't know, 7 or 8, like the net difference there being 1 or 2 million, I would call Profar the better player. Could play the outfield, also plays, obviously, the infield. And like I said, he wouldn't save the world or nothing, but wasn't above average hitter last year. K rate's pretty nice, switch hitter. They've been linked to him before, so I wouldn't be shocked if maybe they, I don't know, kind of open those waters back up. But if anything, I think that's probably it. Besides that, yeah, just roll with what you got.
It is a little weird that he's unsigned. He's an above average player, and they are right up against the luxury tax threshold, the dreaded luxury tax threshold. So who knows if they're going to make an addition to that. Maybe they can make something work by moving IKF. But there's an opening in the outfield that they might not have had a week or so ago. So now Profar might be a good pick.
Yeah, Profar still unsigned. It makes me think of like Gary Sanchez too. You see all the studs in the lineup for the DR, and like Gary Sanchez, free agent, doesn't have a home. Yeah. It's jarring at this point. David, you were doing a couple of games for the Yes Network down in Tampa for Yankee spring training. Just overall, being around the team for a couple of days, what are some of your big takeaways late last week from Yankees camp?
The kids are all right. I mean, really, the top to bottom, there's a handful, five or six young players that have all been really impressive, including, you know, Jason Dominguez, the Martian. He's not going to make the team out of spring training. You don't see too many kids jump from A ball to the big leagues. But the fact that they're even, you know, Aaron Boone even said, well, you never say never. I mean, that's how good that kid has been in spring training. He's probably going to go to AA. But if he continues to make noise and have a big first half in AA, and the Yankees still have a need in the outfield, I would not be surprised for him to get in the conversation really fast. So that's how good he's been. You know, obviously we talk about Volpe and Peraza and Oswaldo Cabrera. Willie Randolph, I value his opinion as much as anybody who's been in camp the whole time, understands infield play as well as anybody, says, don't sleep on Oswaldo Cabrera. He could play. This kid can play, and he's a gem of a guy. So, you know, we tend to think, oh, well, is he going to be the left fielder or not? Oh, he's not. He's going to be that super utility guy. He can play. And if there's a need that arises, he's going to get some at-bats. And he's got shown some pop this spring, too, with a couple of homers. He showed it last year as well. So, the future's bright for the Yankees. The handful of young players have all really kind of been the dominant story in spring training, you know, in my mind. And the week I was there, it was no different. It was just, wow. You know, it was one wow after another with Volpe and Dominguez and Peraza and Cabrera, and the list goes on and on. Pereira, another young outfielder that you maybe haven't heard of. That's a nice prospect that's on the run. Chaparro, got some pop, a young third baseman. You know, it's kind of been under the radar. He's shown some big time bat speed and thunder in his bat. So, yeah, there is a lot of pieces to the puzzle. So if the Yankees want to make a trade, they've got a surplus of young players that are very, very much in demand. And then if the good old fashioned, maybe these kids just break through eventually over the next year or two. You're going to have an influx of good young talent coming. It's good. You know, guys like Dan Roark, they should be happy that there's a lot of good young talent on the way.
Yeah, the overstatements on Oswaldo Cabrera haven't been high enough. I mean, you mentioned Willie Randolph. I kind of asked Garrett Cole the same thing last week. Who are you looking forward to watching each day in these Grapefruit League games? And he could have picked anyone. He picked Oswaldo Cabrera. So you have the encouraging sample size from last season. He's kind of been handed a bunch of different assignments here. This spring training, he's answered the call with all of them. And the people around him are seeing something that us from the outside are probably not seeing in the day-to-day. And they're really excited about him. So I will, I'll take Willie Randolph's word. I'll take Garrett Cole's word for sure. Oswaldo Cabrera is a guy that I don't know if we're taking for granted, like, oh, like he's going to be there. The promise is going to be there. No, like he is supplying the team, the people within the organization with a lot of hope and excitement. So definitely a guy that you want to watch out for as we approach opening day. All right. Guys, anything coming up exciting for you in the week? I know, David, you're going to the big game in Miami with Eduardo. Anything other than that?
I did want to give a shout-out. I was going to do it on the top, and I kind of forgot. But I wanted to give a little shout-out to Joe Pepitone and his family. You know, the colorful Yankee for years back, you know, in the 60s. Actually was a really good baseball player. He was known more for being a character, right? He was like the first guy with a blow dryer, had the big blow-dried hair back in the day. He's credited with being the first guy who brought a blow dryer, an actual hair blow dryer, into the clubhouse. If you ever met Joe, you know what I'm talking about. Just a character at the bar after the games, just telling one story after another, a colorful history, checkered history. But certainly to the Pepitone family, you know, are my deep condolences. And, you know, one of the all time great characters. You know, we lost him in the Yankee family this year. So rest in peace, Joe Pepitone.
Well said. He had 3 all-star appearances, 3 gold gloves, and 5 25 homer seasons in an era in the 60s when it was more pitcher friendly. So a good ball player and someone who was always a welcome sight at Old Timers Day.
Yeah, for sure. A character straight to his core. New York guy through and through. I know, Brooklyn born and raised. One of the all-time colorful Yankees, especially from that era. So we send our condolences to the Pepitone family. All right, guys, that's going to do it here for this episode. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. You do not want to miss anything we have going on there, and you'll stay up to date with what we are streaming each and every week. For David, for James, for our great producer, Dan, this is Justin. We will talk to you next week on Tone the Slab, Pitching with David Cone, a production of John Boy Media.